Well, today we're going to review the old covenant that Yahweh made with Israel soon after the Exodus from Mitzrayim, or Egypt. This was an agreement between Yahweh and the 2.5 million children of Israel, the descendants of Israel, or Jacob, or in Hebrew it's pronounced Yaakov. This covenant was a solemn agreement that was intended to govern the relationship between Yahweh and the people. Yahweh lays out all the conditions the people are supposed to do, and he also tells them many things that he will do. Moshe, or Moses, writes all the rules in a book, probably a scroll, actually. And the people kill 12 oxen, a sacrifice to show that they are making this agreement. It's a blood covenant. And there's a memorial dinner to celebrate the occasion. All this happened about 1,450 years before the Messiah. And we'll read about it in Exodus chapters 19 through 24. Before we go there, we need to set the stage with some other facts and scriptures. The first one is Matthew 5:17. You might think that we don't need to go back to the Old Testament. Some preachers have said that that's old stuff. We don't need to worry about it anymore. But that's not true. And Yahshua said in Matthew 5:17, do not think, much less say, do not think that I came to destroy the Torah or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to complete. And the law and the prophets is a nomenclature that indicates the entirety of what we call the Old Testament. So, and then in the next verse, verse 18, he says, for truly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle shall by no means pass from the Torah till all be done. And that's confirmed in Luke 16:17. Okay, so the new covenant comes after that original covenant at Mount Sinai, and that's found in Jeremiah 31, beginning at verse 31. And that is given at about 600 years before the Messiah, so another 900 years after this original covenant that we'll be studying today. Jeremiah 31:31 says, see, the days are coming, declares Yahweh, when I shall make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, not like the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Mitzrayim, or Egypt, my covenant which they broke, though I was a husband to them, declares Yahweh. And this passage is quoted from Jeremiah in Hebrews chapter 8. And most translations of the New Testament do not put that phrase in there, although I was a husband to them. And I find that hard to understand, because that's very important. Sure. Covenants often create a family relationship. And the family relationship was created at Mount Sinai between Yahweh and the nation of Israel. Okay, verse 33 of Jeremiah 31. For this is the covenant that I shall make with the house of Israel after those days, declares Yahweh. I shall put my Torah in their inward parts and write it on their hearts, and I shall be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. And no longer shall they teach each one his neighbor and each one his brother, saying, know Yahweh, For they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest of them, declares Yahweh. For I shall forgive their crookednesses and remember their sin no more. So, back to 1450 before the Common Era. we'll begin our study in Exodus 19, beginning at verse 1. In the third month, after the children of Israel had come out of the land of Mitzrim, or Egypt, on this day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. And this is the time for the Feast of Weeks. It's the third month of the year, and if we look at Leviticus 23, we can understand how the Feast of Weeks is determined. It doesn't have a regular certain date. It's determined by counting. And let's read it from Leviticus 23, beginning at verse 10. This is the words of Yahweh. Speak to the children of Israel, and you shall say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, and shall reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest, and he shall wave the sheaf before Yahweh for your acceptance. On the morrow after the Sabbath, it's the weekly Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread, the priest shall wave it. And dropping down to verse 15 of Leviticus 23, and from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, you shall count for yourselves seven complete Sabbaths, or seven complete weeks. Until the morrow after the seventh Sabbath, you count 50 days, then you shall bring a new grain offering to Yahweh. That's the Feast of First Fruits, or the Feast of Pentecost, the Day of Pentecost, as we see in the New Testament. The Greek word is Pentecost, count 50. Or Shavuot, which is weeks in Hebrew. Leviticus 23:21. On the same day you shall proclaim a set-apart gathering for yourselves, and you do no servile work on it, a law forever in all your dwellings throughout your generations. Now, because months can be different lengths, the moon goes around the earth once every 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and 2.8 seconds. I didn't figure that out myself. Somebody else told me that. Or about 29 and a half days. Because of that, a month, as we observe the new moons, can be either 29 days or 30 days. And you can have two 29-day months in a row, or you can have two 30-day months in a row. And that can affect how the count comes out. When Passover starts, and during Passover, seven-day festival, the first day of the week, or the Sabbath day, can happen on any one of those 7 days during the days of unleavened bread. And you start your count the day after the Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread. So that means that the Feast of Pentecost can be any time from the fourth day of the third month to the 11th day of the third month. And if you want to know how that gets figured out, you can see me afterwards. Okay. Now we go back to the second verse of Exodus 19. There won't be as many spaces between other verses. Okay. They set out from Rephaim and had come to the wilderness of Sinai and camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain. And Moshe went up to Elohim, and Yahweh called to him from the mountain, saying, this is what you are to say to the house of Jacob, or Yaakov. and declare to the children of Israel. Israel is the other name for Jacob. Exodus 19:4, you have seen what I did to the Midianites and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. And now, if you diligently obey my voice and shall guard my covenant, then you shall be my treasured possession above all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a set-apart nation. Those are the words which you are to speak to the children of Israel. So Yahweh proposed a covenant with Israel. And the Israelites thought, well, this is a good thing. You know, Yahweh is the one who brought these plagues on Egypt so that we could be freed from our slavery. He's brought us through the sea on dry shod, and here we are. We've been traveling for 7 weeks, and we're here at this wonderful mountain. This, by the way, was the same mountain where Moshe had seen the burning bush. And they said in verse 9, and Yahweh said to Moshe, see, I am coming to you in a thick cloud, so that the people can all turn our pages. So that the people hear when I speak with you and believe you forever. And Moshe reported these words of the people to Yahweh. And Yahweh said to Moshe, go to the people and set them apart today and tomorrow. I think I turned too many pages, didn't I? No, I didn't. Okay, today and tomorrow, and they shall wash their garments and shall be prepared for the third day. And on the third day, Yahweh shall come down from the mountain upon Mount Sinai before the eyes of all the people. And you shall make a border for the people all around, saying, take heed to yourselves that you do not go up to the mountain nor touch the border of it, for whoever touches the mountain shall certainly be put to death. Not a hand is to touch it, but he shall certainly be stoned or shot with an arrow, whether man or beast, he shall not live. When the trumpet sounds long, let them come near the mountain. And Moshe came down from the mountain to the people and set the people apart to Yahweh. And they washed their garments. They had to be clean. And verse 15, and he said to the people, be prepared by the third day. Do not come near a wife. So they had to be clean. The people had to be clean in order to make a valid covenant. Verse 16, and it came to be on the third day in the morning that there were thunderings and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain, and the sound of the ram's horn was very loud, and all the people who were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet with Elohim, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. And Mount Sinai was in smoke, all of it, because Yahweh descended upon it in the fire. And its smoke went up like the smoke of a furnace, and all the mountain trembled exceedingly. And when the blast of the ram's horn sounded long and became louder and louder, Moshe spoke, and Elohim answered him by a voice. And Yahweh came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mountain, and Yahweh called Moshe to the top of the mountain, and Moshe went up. And Yahweh said to Moshe, go down and warn the people, lest they break through unto Yahweh and see, and many of them fall. And let the priests who come near Yahweh set themselves apart too, lest Yahweh break out against them. Priests? Yes, apparently there were priests at that time, although the last mention of priests was about the priests in Egypt, but there were priests among the Israelites. The heads of families functioned as priests at that time. So that's probably what he's referring to here. Exodus 19:23, and Moshe said to Yahweh, "The people are not able to come up to Mount Sinai, for you warned us, saying, 'Make a border around the mountain and set it apart.' And Yahweh said to him, 'Come, go down, then come up, you and Aaron with you, but do not let the priests and the people break through to come up to Yahweh, lest he break out against them.' And Moshe went down to the people and spoke to them." And then we come to chapter 20, verse 1. "And Elohim spoke all these words, saying, 'I am Yahweh your Elohim, who brought you out of the land of Mitzrayim, out of the house of slavery. You have no other mighty ones against my face. And you do not make yourself a carved image or any likeness of that which is in the heavens above, or which is in the earth beneath, or which is in the waters under the earth.'" Now, would that list of creatures include a calf? Obviously it would. So don't make a calf. This is the Ten Commandments, the Ten Words. Exodus 20, verse 5, "You do not bow down to them or serve them, for I, Yahweh your Elohim, am a jealous El, visiting the crookedness of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing kindness to thousands of those who love me and guard my commands. Do not bring or lift up or take the name of Yahweh your Elohim for nothing, for Yahweh does not leave the one unpunished who brings his name to nothing. Remember the Sabbath day to set it apart. 6 days you labor and shall do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of Yahweh your Elohim. You do not do any work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your maidservant, your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates." So that's the weekly Sabbath, and there are other Sabbaths, the annual Sabbaths also. Exodus 20, verse 11, "For in 6 days Yahweh made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore Yahweh blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart." Verse 12, "Respect your father and your mother, so that your days are prolonged upon the soil which Yahweh your Elohim is giving you." Verse 13, "You do not murder, even in your heart." Yahshua made that clear. Verse 14, "You do not commit adultery, even in your heart." Verse 15, "You do not steal, even in your heart." 16, "You do not bear false witness against your neighbor." 17, "You do not covet your neighbor's house. You do not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, or whatever belongs to your neighbor." And then in verse 18, "All the people saw and felt the thunders and the lightning flashes, the sound of the ram's horn and the mountain smoking. And the people saw it, and they trembled and stood at a distance and said to Moshe, you speak to us and we'll hear, but do not let Elohim speak with us, lest we die. And Moshe said to the people, 'Do not fear, for Elohim has come to prove you or test you, and in order that his fear may be upon you, so that you do not sin.'" So the people stood at a distance, but Moshe drew near the thick darkness where Elohim was. And Yahweh said to Moses, "Say this to the children of Israel, 'You yourselves have seen that I have spoken to you from the heavens. You do not make besides me mighty ones of silver. You do not make mighty ones of gold for yourselves, even if you make them to look like a calf. And verse 24, make an altar of earth. And that's the Hebrew for that is Adamah. The very same thing that was the name of the first man, Adam. Because he was made of earth. Make an altar of earth for me, and you shall slaughter on it your burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your sheep and your cattle. In every place where I cause my name to be remembered, I shall come to you and bless you. And if you make me an altar of stone, do not build it of cut stone, for if you use your chisel on it, you have profaned it. Nor do you go up by steps to my altar, lest your nakedness be exposed on it. They wore skirts at that time, sort of, robes. Okay, so if you want to build an altar to worship the creator of everything, make it a dirt. You go to many churches today and you'll see polished marble. Yahweh says that's not good. You messed it up. You took some perfectly good marble and messed it up. Chapter 21, verse 1. These are the right rulings which you are to set before them. When you buy a Hebrew servant, he serves 6 years, and the seventh he goes out free for nothing. U.S. slavery violated that law. When you have a servant, you become responsible for that person. We're going to see a deep responsibility in this relationship between the master and the servant. Our black people have been cheated for centuries, multiple times, multiple ways. 21 verse 3, if he comes in by himself, he goes out by himself. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons and daughters, the wife and her children are her master's, and he goes out by himself. And if the servant truly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, let me not go out free, then his master shall bring him before Elohim, and shall bring him to the door or the doorpost, and his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. And when a man sells his daughter to be a female servant, she does not go out as a male servants do. If she is displeasing in the eyes of her master who has engaged her to himself, in other words, he may have bought her as a servant from her family, and with the intention of marrying her, then he shall let her be ransomed. In other words, he can, if he gave $10,000 for this girl, he should be willing to give the $10,000 back if he doesn't want the girl. He shall have no authority to sell her to a foreign people because of him deceiving her. And if he has engaged her to his son, he is to do to her as is the right of daughters. And I'm sure that's going to be clarified later in the scriptures. If he takes another wife, her food, her covering, and her marriage rights are not to be diminished. And if he does not do these things for her, then she shall go out for nothing without silver. He who strikes a man so that he dies shall certainly be put to death. But if he did not lie in wait, but Elohim delivered him into his hand, then he shall appoint for you a place where he is to flee. And sacrifices may be in order at that time. But when a man acts presumptuously against his neighbor to kill him by treachery, you are to take him even from my altar, to die. So if someone intentionally murders one of his fellow Israelites, then that's the death penalty. And he who strikes his father or his mother shall certainly be put to death. And I have known someone who has struck their mother and they were not put to death, but that penalty is upon them. 21 verse 16, and he who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he is bound in his, is found in his hand, he shall certainly be put to death. So kidnapping at that time was a death penalty. And he who curses his father or his mother shall certainly be put to death. And when men, or verse 18, and when men strive together and one smites the other with a stone or with his fist, and he does not die, but is confined to his bed, if he rises again and walks about outside with his staff, then he who smote him shall be innocent. He only pays for his lost time and sees to it that he is completely healed. And when a man strikes his male or female servant with a rod so that he dies under his hand, he shall certainly be punished. And that punishment is not made clear. In verse 21, but if he remains alive a day or two, he is not punished, for he is his property. Verse 22, and this is quoted from the Complete Jewish Bible, if people are fighting with each other and happen to hurt a pregnant woman so badly that her unborn child dies, then even if no other harm follows, he must be fined. He must pay the amount set by the woman's husband and confirmed by judges. And Exodus 21:23, but if there is injury, then you shall give life for life. Verse 24, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, lash for lash. So the captain didn't know, but he was right. That was from the Bible. Eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. if you read it appropriately. it happens that the principle is, it appears that the principle is that what he intended for the other person is going to be done for him. So if you knock someone's tooth out, your tooth gets knocked out, and an eye for an eye, and so on. And when a man smites the eye of his male or female servant and destroys it, he is to let him go free for the sake of his eye. And if he knocks out the tooth of his male or female servant, he is to let him go free for the sake of his tooth. And when an ox gores a man or a woman to death, then the ox shall certainly be stoned, and its flesh is not eaten, and the owner of the ox is innocent. However, if the ox was previously in the habit of goring, and its owner has been warned, and he has not kept it confined, so that it has killed a man or a woman, the ox is stoned, and its owner is also put to death. So we have an equivalent today. We don't have oxen, most of us, but we do have big, heavy things that can kill people, called automobiles and pickup trucks and so on. And we have laws that demand that if we operate such things, we have insurance so that people are covered in case they are harmed in an accident, either financially or physically, or even many people die in accidents, car accidents. Okay. And, you know, as In this case, the ox would be stoned and the owner would be put to death if he had already known that this ox was dangerous. Verse 30, if a sin covering is laid upon him, then he shall give the ransom of his life, whatever is laid upon him. Whether it has gored a son or gored a daughter, according to this right ruling, it is done to him. If the ox gores a male or female servant, he is to give to the master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox is stoned. And when a man opens a pit, or if a man digs a pit and does not cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls in it, the owner of the pit is to repay. He is to give silver to the owner, and the dead beast is his. And when the ox of a man smites the ox of his neighbor and it dies, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the silver from it, and also divide the dead ox. So everybody's going to have steak for a while. Or if it was known that the ox was previously in the habit of goring, then the owner has not kept it confined, he shall certainly repay ox for ox, while the dead beast is his. When a man steals an ox or a sheep and shall slaughter it or sell it, we're in chapter 22 of Exodus now, he repays 5 cattle for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. If the thief is found breaking in and the thief is struck so that he dies, there is no guilt for his bloodshed. In other words, if somebody's in your house, they're there to do damage and perhaps to harm your family, so you're entitled to do what's necessary. Verse 3, if the sun has risen on him, there is guilt for his bloodshed. He shall certainly repay. If he has not the means, then he shall be sold for his theft. So if he gets away out of the house, but he steals something, then he has to repay for whatever he stole. Verse 4, if the theft is indeed found alive in his hand, whether it is an ox or a donkey or a sheep, he repays double. When a man lets a field or vineyard be grazed bare, and lets loose his livestock, and it feeds in another man's field, he repays from the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. When fire breaks out and spreads to thorn bushes so that it stacked grain or stacked or standing grain or the field is consumed, he who kindled the fire shall certainly repay. Verse 7 of Exodus 22, when a man gives silver or goods to his neighbor to guard, and it is stolen out of the man's house, if the thief is found, he repays double. If the thief is not found, then the master of the house shall be brought before Elohim to see whether he has put his hand into his neighbor's goods. For every matter of transgression, for ox, for donkey, for sheep, for garment, or for whatever is lost, which another claims to be his, let the matter of them come before Elohim, and whomever Elohim declares wrong repays double to his neighbor. Verse 10, when a man gives to his neighbor a donkey or an ox or sheep or a beast to watch over, and it dies, or is injured, or is driven away while no one is looking, let an oath of Yahweh be between them both, that he has not put his hand into his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept that, and he does not repay. But if it is indeed stolen from him, he repays the owner. So if you give somebody something to take care of, and he says, well, I don't know what happened to it. but it's in his back pocket. He's found guilty and he has to repay. Let an oath of Yahweh be between them both, that he has not put his hand to his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept that, and he does not have to repay. But if it is indeed stolen from him, he repays its owner. If it is torn to pieces, then let him bring the evidence of it. He does not repay what was torn. It was an accident. You know, the sheep was out in the field and the wolves got it, or the coyotes or whatever got it. And verse 14, and when a man borrows from his neighbor and it is injured or dies while the owner of it is not present, he shall certainly repay. But if its owner was with it, he does not repay. If it was hired, he is entitled to the hire. And when a man entices a maiden who is not engaged and lies with her, he shall certainly pay the bride price for her to be his wife. I hope that's clear. If her father absolutely refuses to give her to him, he pays according to the bride price of maidens. Verse 18, do not allow a practicer of witchcraft to live. Anyone lying with a beast shall certainly be put to death. He who slaughters to a mighty one except to Yahweh only, sacrifices to any other mighty one, is to be put under the ban, which means he gets killed. Verse 21, do not tread down a sojourner. That's a traveler who's traveling in your land, or oppress him, for you were sojourners in the land of Mitzrayim. Do not afflict a widow or fatherless child. If you do afflict them at all, if they cry out to me at all, I shall certainly hear their cry, and my wrath shall burn, and I shall slay you with the sword. Your wives shall be widows and your children fatherless. If you do lend silver to any of my people, the poor among you, who are not to be, you are not to be like one who lends on interest to him. Do not lay interest on him. So if you loan money to one of the brethren, there's no interest. If you take your neighbor's garment as a pledge at all, you are to return it to him before the sun goes down, for that is his only covering. It is his garment for his skin. What does he sleep in? And it shall be that when he cries to me, I shall hear, for I show favor. Do not revile Elohim or curse a ruler of your people. And that, in that case, Elohim probably refers to a judge. That's another translation that's valid for Elohim. Do not delay to give your giving your harvest and your vintage. Give me the firstborn of your sons. Likewise, you are to do with your oxen, your sheep. It is to be with its mother 7 days. On the eighth day, you give it to me, says Yahweh. And you are set apart men to me, and you do not eat any meat which is torn in pieces in the field. You throw it to the dogs. Do not bring a false, Exodus 23, do not bring a false report. Do not put your hand with the wrong to be a malicious witness. Do not follow a crowd to do evil. Do not bear witness in a strife so as to turn aside after many, to turn aside what is right. And this happened at Joshua's trial, didn't it? They got people to swear that Yahshua had done this or that, which he had not done. And these were the priests. And do not favor a poor man in his strife. So if you're a judge, then you don't favor a poor man, and you certainly don't favor a rich man. When you meet your, verse 4 of Exodus 23, when you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you shall certainly return it to him. When you see the donkey of a man who hates you lying under its burden, you shall refrain from leaving it to him. You shall certainly help him. Do not turn aside the right ruling of your poor in his strife. Keep yourself from a false matter, and do not kill the innocent and the righteous, for I do not declare the wrong right. And do not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the seeing one and twists the words of the righteous. And do not oppress a sojourner, that traveler, as you yourselves know the heart of a sojourner, because you were sojourners in the land of Mitzrayim. And that refers to what has been established as Traveler's Aid, just an organization that helps travelers in obedience to this command. Verse 10, and for 6 years you are to sow your land and shall gather its increase, but the seventh year you are to let it rest and shall leave it, and the poor of your people shall eat it, and what they leave the beasts of the field eat. Do the same with your vineyard and your olive yard. 23:12, 6 days you are to do your work, and on the seventh day you rest, in order that your ox and your donkey might rest, and your son and the son of your female servant and the sojourner might be refreshed. 13, and in all that I have said to you, take heed, and make no mention of the name of other mighty ones. Let it not be heard from your mouth. 3 times in a year you are to observe a festival to me. The festivals of Yahweh are grouped in 3 for 3 different seasons of the year. That's my comment. Verse 15, guard the festival of unleavened bread. 7 days you eat unleavened bread, as I commanded you, at the time appointed in the month of Abib, for in it you came out of Mitzrayim, and do not appear before me empty-handed. Verse 16, and the festival of a harvest, the first fruits of your labors, which you have sown in the field, and the festival of the ingathering at the outgoing of the year, when you have gathered in the fruit of your labors from the field. 3 times in the year, all your males are to appear before the Master Yahweh. Do not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leavened bread, and the fat of my offering shall not remain until morning. Eat it or burn it up. 19, bring the first of your first fruits of your land to the house of Yahweh, your Elohim. Do not cook a young goat in its mother's milk. And now comes a prophecy of the Messiah as part of this covenant. Exodus 23, verse 20. Look, I am sending a messenger before you to guard you in the way and to bring you into the place which I have prepared. Be on guard before him and obey his voice. Do not rebel against him, for he is not going to pardon your transgression, for my name is in him. But if you diligently obey his voice and shall do all that I speak, then I shall be an enemy to your enemies and a distressor to those who distress you. For my messenger shall go before you and shall bring you in to the Amorites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Kenanites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, and I shall cut them off. Verse 24, do not bow down to their mighty ones, nor serve them, nor do according to their works, but without fail overthrow them, and without fail break down their pillars. And you shall serve Yahweh your Elohim, and he, Yahshua, that's being prophesied here, he shall bless your bread and your water, and I shall remove sickness from your midst. None shall miscarry or be barren in your land. I shall fill the number of your days, and I shall send my fear before you and cause confusion among all the people to whom you come, and make all your enemies turn their backs to you. He's making a lot of promises as part of his keeping this covenant. Here are some more. Exodus 23:28, and I shall send hornets before you, which shall drive out the Hivite and the Canaanite and the Hittite from before you. I shall not drive them out from before you in 1 year, lest the land becomes a waste and the beasts of the field become too numerous for you. Little by little, I shall drive them out from before you until you have increased and you inherit the land. And I shall set your border from the Sea of Reeds to the Sea of the Philistines, and from the wilderness to the river. I shall give the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and you shall drive them out before you. Do not make a covenant with them, nor with their mighty ones. Do not make a covenant with them, nor with their mighty ones. Let them, verse 33, let them not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me when you serve their mighty ones, when it becomes a snare to you. Exodus 24. Now the conditions of the covenant are clear. Yahweh has given them to Moses. Exodus 24, and to Moshe he said, come up to Yahweh, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and you shall bow yourselves from a distance. Okay, and that's not for that moment, but for a little later. But Moshe shall draw near to Yahweh by himself, and let them not draw near, nor let the people go up with him. And Moshe came and related to the people all the words of Yahweh, and all the right rulings. And all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which Yahweh has spoken, we shall do. So they agreed to all the terms of the covenant. Once they heard the details, they said, we're going to do everything he said. Verse 4 of Exodus 24, and Moshe wrote down all the words of Yahweh and rose up early in the morning. He's working through the night and built an altar at the foot of the mountain. What was it built of? Dirt. Okay, or stones. Uncut stones. He built an altar at the foot of, and 12 standing columns for the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent young men from the children of Israel, and they offered burnt offerings and slaughtered peace offerings, sacrifices of bulls to Yahweh. And Moshe took half the blood and put it in basins, and half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. Verse 24, and he took the book of the covenant that he had written and read it in the hearing of the people, and they said, all that Elohim has spoken we shall do and obey. So they repeated their agreement. This is, I think, the third time that they're agreeing to the covenant. And Moshe took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, "See, the blood of the covenant which Yahweh has made with you concerning all these words." And Moshe went up also, Aaron and Nadab and Abihu, that's Aaron's sons, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and they saw the Elohim of Israel, and under his feet like a paved work of sapphire stone, and like the heavens for brightness. So they went up and they had the experience of being in the throne room of Yahweh. And we don't know how he did that or what it was like, but you would think it would be something they would remember for the rest of their lives. And how impressive that must have been. And then they had a meal to remember this covenant. Verse 11, "Yet he did not stretch out his hands against the chiefs of the children of Israel. And they saw Elohim, and they ate and drank." Verse 12 of Exodus 24, "And Yahweh said to Moshe, 'Come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you tablets of stone and the Torah and the command which I have written to teach them.' And Moshe arose with his assistant Yehoshua, and Moshe went up to the mountain of Elohim. And he said to the elders, 'Wait here for us until we come back to you. And see, Aaron and Hur are with you. Whoever has matters, let him go to them.' And Moshe went up to the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. And the esteem of Yahweh dwelt on Mount Sinai. And the cloud covered it for 6 days. And on the seventh day, he called to Moshe out of the midst of the cloud. And the appearance of the esteem of Yahweh was like a consuming fire on top of the mountain before the eyes of the children of Israel." We're going to remember this day. This covenant was not faulty in any way. The terms were good. The terms were good for Yahweh, and they were good for the people. But the people broke it almost immediately. Chapters 25 to 31 of Exodus are not in time sequence. The terms were good of this covenant. Oh, I'm sorry. I lost my place. The next thing that happened is the golden calf incident, which happens in Exodus 32. In verse 7 it says, "And Yahweh said to Moshe, 'Go, get down, for the people whom you brought out of the land of Mitzrayim have corrupted themselves.'" And, of course, the one who brought them out of the land of Mitzrayim was Yahweh. But yes, he's taking a lesson from Adam and Eve. The woman did it. Yeah. Oh, the serpent did it. Not my fault. But that's what's recorded. So although the people broke that covenant, we can still keep it. We can obey all the terms that apply to the people and let Yahweh do as he pleases for the terms that apply to him. He is not bound to do all that was supposed to be done by him in this covenant. They broke the covenant. We broke the covenant. And he's not responsible for keeping his half of it. But if we today lovingly through our love of Yahweh, keep the people's part as he chose to give it to us, then he may choose to bless us. I believe he wants to bless us, and he still can and will. In the 3,500 years since he gave the terms of that covenant, the situation has changed a lot. But the principles of loving Yahweh, keeping the commandments, and being a fair and loving neighbor to others is still doable. Some may say there's no point in keeping the terms of a broken covenant, but Yahshua says otherwise. He said it was a salvation issue. In fact, Mark 10:17, we read Mark 10:17, and as he was going forth into the way, there ran one to him and kneeled down to him and asked him, "Good teacher, what shall I do that I might inherit eternal life?" And Yahshua said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good but one, even Elohim." And most people interpret that as saying, "I'm not good. I'm just Yahshua, just a guy." But I think what he's really saying is, if you're sincere about calling me good, then you're calling me Elohim, and you're right, because he was a mighty being at that time. He was at that time the creator of the heavens and the earth. So you know the commandments, he says. Do not kill, do not commit adultery, do not steal, do not bear false witness, do not defraud, honor your father and your mother. So Yahshua is telling him to obey the 10 words as which are part of this covenant, and to let that rule your life. And also he says, do not defraud, and that's certainly part of this covenant, not to defraud others. And I think it's imperative on us to understand the value of this covenant, even though it has technically been broken. We still are bound by the terms of this covenant, the Ten Commandments and all the other words that were written on that scroll, the Book of the Covenant. And we need to follow them.